So as I alluded to at the beginning of the service, I'm going to ask for audience participation again this morning. Last week, if you remember, if you were here, part of what we did was to turn the story of the Good Samaritan into a little bit of a melodrama. This morning, there won't be any cheering or booing, but I am going to invite you all to participate. Although what I'm asking for actually is not audience participation per se, because this is not a performance. I am not an entertainer, and you are not here to provide applause. What we are doing here is group engagement with the scriptures, or at least I hope that's what it is. So with that in mind, as we move into this group engagement process, I'm going to invite all of us to participate a little bit differently than we usually do, which means I'm going to invite you and myself to engage in the scripture, not only with our heads and with our hearts and with our spirits, but also with our bodies. But just briefly, and not in a way that I think any of you will find too uncomfortable. I encourage you all to participate, but of course, if you choose not to, that is completely okay. So, now that you are all completely distracted and wondering what on earth is she going to ask us to do with our bodies, I'm going to gently guide you back to the text. Like last week's story of the Good Samaritan, today's passage tells another very familiar story, this story about Mary and Martha. There's Mary, who we most often imagine to be in the living room area of this house, presumably with the men who were also there. And we're told that she's sitting at Jesus' feet and listening to his teachings, the picture of devotion. And then there's Martha, Mary's sister, who is most often thought to be in the kitchen, apparently by herself and multitasking like the best of us. I can imagine her warming pita bread on the fire and boiling water for the lentils and chopping onions for the tabbouleh, maybe. A picture of productivity. So here's where your bodily engagement is invited. I'm going to ask you to consider which of these two women you most naturally identify with, even the men here. Now, this is not to say that you always and only identify with Mary or with Martha. I'm looking for a gut reaction kind of response. Which one do you most easily, most quickly feel some sort of kinship with? And then once you've decided, I'm going to invite you to acknowledge your choice in front of all of us by not just hesitantly waving your hand, but by standing up with conviction. And there's no judgment, just curiosity. So make your decision. And I'm going to ask, how many of you resonate more readily, more easily with Mary sitting at Jesus' feet and listening to his teachings with single-minded devotion? You can all look around. Not a single choice here. All right, well, how many of you resonate more naturally with Martha, hard at work, bustling about, 1,000 things on her mind? And a few of you are choosing not. Well, that is a complete and utter surprise to me. Thank you all for your courage. You may be seated. And remember, there is no judgment. Except that it feels like there's judgment, right? It feels like in Jesus' response to Martha, there's judgment. Martha is doing her thing, focusing on the tasks at hand, presumably preparing a meal for her guests, whom she had welcomed into her home. As far as Martha is concerned, she's doing the right thing. Showing hospitality to guests was considered a commandment, an act of obedience to God, an expression of kindness. I found something called the Jewish Virtual Website. Of course, there are many resources, but it says, when a Jew knew of strangers who were hungry or needed a place to relax, it was a legal obligation. And this was especially true in the time of Jesus, when Jewish law specifically required that strangers be made to feel welcome. And they were reminded that they, as the people of Israel, the Hebrews, when they wandered, they were strangers in a strange land, and they relied on hospitality. So showing hospitality was a thing, more so, much more so, in Jewish culture in Jesus' time. So back to Martha. Having invited Jesus and his disciples into her home, as they were passing through her village, very likely knowing, because they were traveling, that they were hungry and they did need a place to relax, Martha, as a devout Jew, had an obligation to fulfill, a law to obey, a commandment from God. And so she busied herself keeping it. She focused on fulfilling it. Her mind and her heart and her hands were quickly occupied with how she was going to obey this law of hospitality. She wanted to honor her guest and her God by expressing kindness through extending hospitality. As far as Martha knew, she was doing what she needed to be doing. She was doing the right thing. And at the same time, Martha knew that Mary was not doing the right thing. She was not doing what she needed to be doing. She was not helping Martha. She was not showing hospitality to their guests. She was sitting in there with the men doing what? Listening to them talk. She was sitting in there right next to Jesus doing nothing. As far as Martha could tell, Mary was not honoring their guests or their God. As far as Martha could tell, Mary was doing the wrong thing. So we're going to imagine a little bit. I can imagine Martha trying to catch Mary's eye. And when that didn't work, maybe making a bigger racket with her cookware in the hopes that Mary would look up and think, oh my gosh, I should be in there helping. But Mary just kept sitting there, looking at Jesus, listening to every word he was saying, oblivious to everything else that needed to be done. I can imagine, and maybe some of you too can too, that that was infuriating to Martha. I can imagine Martha rolling her eyes before directing her glare to Jesus instead of Mary. And maybe Jesus felt the heat of her stare and looked away from his listeners and met her gaze, having Jesus' attention then, and figuring that if Mary wouldn't respond to her, clearly she would respond to Jesus. Martha said, as we know, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." And I can imagine Martha punctuating her words with a final glare at Mary, and then immediately turning around, heading back to her chopping station, not even waiting for an answer from Jesus, because she assumed that that's what he would do. So she, I can imagine, picks up her chopping knife in anticipation of handing it over to her sister so that she can go pour the wine, because she could use a sip. But before she could do any of that, Jesus delivered his zinger. "Martha," he said, I think maybe with a little firmness in his voice, and something in his tone made her stop where she was. "Martha," he said again, maybe with a little more tenderness. And she turned around, I can imagine, and met his gaze. "You are worried and distracted by many things," he continued. And perhaps some of the hardness in her eyes and in her heart began to soften as she realized that Jesus was seeing her. "You are worried and distracted by many things," he had said. And Martha realized in that moment how right he was. She was worried and distracted and frazzled and overwhelmed because there were things that needed to get done, many things. Who else would do them if she didn't? But holding her gaze and as if he was reading her mind, Jesus continued, "Few things are needed. Indeed, only one. What? Martha maybe thought. What one thing? Is it the wine? Is it the olives? Did we forget to put out the bowl of water for their feet? And she looked at Jesus, wondering, what is the one thing that's needed? And Jesus said, Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her. Ouch. Mary has chosen the better part? What? I don't understand. What are you talking about? What do you want from me, Jesus? And that's where the story ends. We don't know what Martha did after that. We don't know for sure what Mary did, although my best guess is that she stayed right where she was, sitting at Jesus' feet. But I wonder what Martha did. Either way, the question remains, what is that one thing needed? What is the thing that Mary chose that Jesus called the better part? It often seems like this passage is used to make a distinction between being and doing, between sitting at Jesus' feet and listening and being up and active and doing the work. We ask, like I did at the beginning of my sermon, which of you is a Mary and which of you is a Martha? Do you sit and listen or do you do? Do you more readily contemplate Jesus' teachings, or are you more likely to be found getting your hands dirty and doing the work of a disciple? Which one are you? And we ask that question with an unspoken or sometimes spoken understanding, at least from this passage, that it's better to be a Mary, right? Because Mary chose the better part. Jesus said that. It's true that Jesus never said anything directly about homosexuality. But there it is, right there. Mary has chosen the better part. So what about all the Marthas in the world? What about all the Marthas in this room? Is there something wrong with us? Do we have to change who we are or how we are in the world? And if we do, how will all the work get done? Because the Marys sure as heck aren't going to do it. I don't think that's what Jesus had in mind when he said to Martha that Mary had chosen the better part. I don't think Jesus was making a distinction between being and doing. I don't think he was judging contemplation as better than action. Or I don't think he was condemning the worker bees in the world and praising those who just sit and listen. I think Jesus was lifting up being present. What a gift it is to be in the presence of someone who is fully present, not distracted, not focused on 100 other things or even 10 other things or sometimes even one other thing, but fully present, taking in the fullness of what is happening, offering their full self to what's going on, knowing perhaps that what's happening right here in this moment, in these moments, is more important than everything else that they could be doing, or sometimes maybe even they feel like they should be doing. That, I think, is what Mary was doing. And that, I think, is what Jesus was lifting up, being fully present, because that's a profound gift. I would even say that it's a holy gift, being in the presence of someone who is fully present, fully focused, someone whose attention isn't divided, whose mind and heart are not distracted. That's to be in a sacred space. Talk about honoring the other person. Talk about honoring God. To show up for another person as your full self, with your true self, offering to be fully present, not distracted, with your heart and your mind and your hands available to the fullness of what's happening in those moments. That's an incredible gift, and it's a rare gift, especially in our present culture that values multitasking and that thrives on distraction and that encourages 30-second or less, it seems, attention spans. It's a rare gift because it's hard to do. For most, if not all of us, being fully present, if we're honest, And as Martha, I think, would attest to, it's not easy. It's an incredible and profound and even a sacred gift. And it's hard. Perhaps one of the hardest gifts to offer. It's much harder to give the gift of being fully present than it is to offer a delicious meal. It's much harder, for most of us at least, to offer ourselves as fully present than to give someone a place to relax. To show up with and for another person as completely present is what Mary chose. And that, I think, is what Jesus was acknowledging as the better thing. To show up with and for another as completely present is to extend hospitality to the fullest extent. I think it's what it is to fulfill the law of love, in love. So that, I think, is what Jesus was lifting up, and that is one of the things to which we are called as followers of Jesus. So we're going to end with one more opportunity for bodily engagement. Same idea, different questions. And this time, once you've stood, I would like you to stay standing. So first question, which of you has received the gift of someone being fully present to you ever in your life? Which of you has offered the gift of being fully present to someone else? Which of you has the capacity to give and to receive the gift of being fully present? And who here among us will have to practice that a little to do it more easily? And I'm going to raise my hand because I've been standing the whole time. That is absolutely true. May it be so. Amen.